Dexter Fowler, Dan McLaughlin, the call on FS Midwest. You also heard from the Cardinal manager, Mike Schilt, and Yadier Molina kind of called that one by throwing his arms up into the... It used to be back in the day with the greatest show on turf when you saw Kurt Warner drop back and you could see a receiver open, you'd throw your arms up into the air because you knew it was touchdown. A touchdown. Yes. That's what Yadi did last night for Dex.
I could see that being a tad bit easier in football. You know, you see somebody break open, you got a chance. Yadi just seen a lot of baseball, knew the way Dex was swinging it, had a feeling what was coming right there, and absolutely nailed it. And boy, did we need it, huh? Yadi was more excited in the moment than he was in the media scrum
afterwards.
Yeah, he's a little bit more subdued. That's okay.
Kind of dry there.
That's fine.
It's exciting, though, man. It's exciting moments. Certainly having Dexter do what he's doing is big. The home run showing up. That's how I thought the Cardinals were going to win a ton of games this year. Yeah, I mean, I felt like that's how this offense was set up. You're going to get somebody on, you're going to crush a homer. You're going to get somebody on, you're going to crush a homer. And Miles Michaelis, I mean, you look at the overall numbers, didn't have his best day, but the team battled back, gave him a chance to win. A great overall victory against a club. I mean, you should beat them. And that was their best pitcher they're rolling out right now with all the guys that they've got hurt. Hopefully that sets the tempo for the rest of the weekend.
Cardinals' best unit so far this year, well, by far, I think this year, has been their bullpen. Mm-hmm. It's been pretty strong top to bottom, even with Jordan Hicks out. The offense is going to have to do stuff like this, like what they did last night, to help out that starting staff, and really the entire pitching staff. You're just going to have some monster offensive games. I wouldn't call six runs monster, but being able to come back with a deficit and the bullpen being able to hold for a while to allow the offense to do what they did, that's how they're going to have to win games the rest of the year. I don't really see it being an especially dominating rotation in the final month of the season. I think the pen's going to be perfectly fine. The offense is going to have to help out a lot like they did last night.
And, of course, you got a huge pinch hit at bat, a walk from Matt Carpenter.
I think it's important that we celebrate and appreciate, at least from my perspective, when Matt Carpenter does something really well. And he went up there and took a tremendous at bat to set the table for Dex. And so that needs to be appreciated. And you can say, well, that's his job. What is his job? But he did his job well. And he came off the bench and with the right kind of mindset, took a really, really good, tough, quality at bat, worked a deep count, and then made the guy make pitches and worked a walk and brought the go-ahead run to the plate, which we were rewarded for.
Mike Ryder, can you do me a favor? Can we start that again and just end it after does something?
I think it's important that we celebrate and appreciate, at least from my perspective, when Matt Carpenter does something.
Oh, jeez. What the hell, Randy?
Damn. I was wondering where you were going with that, but then I totally get it. And I got a feeling we're going to use that a lot. I kind of feel like...
That is the happiest you've been with yourself in a long time, man.
It is, no doubt.
And I got to tell you, I'm pretty happy with you, too. That's good.
One of my favorite things about Mike Shield is how much he loves his guys, how behind him he is, how supportive he is. And remember, he did the same thing with Dexter Fowler last year. Same stuff with Dex. But we've seen Dex have a little turnaround. But I will say, celebrates a tad too far. I know. All I'm picturing is afterwards, after the game, forget everything else. It's presents and balloons. It's celebrate.
Yes. Everybody in the clubhouse ran right past Dex and
kicks
into Carpenter's arms.
Look,
you got the walk. Attaboy. Dexter's like, what about me?
He's building up his guy that everybody's been tearing down. I totally understand. His pregame scrum was essentially about Matt Carpenter and why he ever plays. And, Mike Shilt is trying to just make everybody know that he has faith in his guy. Let his guy know, even more importantly, he's got faith in him. So, that's celebrate.
I thought one of the other cool things about last night was that they got Dominic Leon right into the game, and he pitched pretty well at Memphis, and he gets the win. Gallegos is a huge part of this team, obviously. Andrew Miller with a scoreless eighth, and then Carlos coming in, making it exciting again. 15th save, though, in 18 opportunities.
Are you not entertained?
I'm entertained completely.
That is it? Yeah, on the edge of your seat, thinking that one was going to slip away. It doesn't. Dominic Leon, he was talking before the game in the pregame show about just being... being confident in his stuff and attacking. And that's something before he got sent down the first time where he was just nibbling. He'd fall behind with a little cutter and trying to make it perfect right off the plate and would just miss and then would miss with the slider. And all of a sudden you're in hitter's counts and these guys are ready for you. Five pitches in an inning last night, just pounding the zone. I don't know what that means going forward. I do know it means he's available tonight because he only threw five pitches. Bullpen has been such a strength for the Cardinals. You got Jack Flaherty on the mound for game two. You got to love your chances heading into this.
When bullpens around baseball have been struggling, and I believe there are only four teams with an ERA, a bullpen ERA under four, and that might have changed from last night, but I know the number's been holding steady around that for most of the season. What the Cardinals have is one of the top bullpens in baseball. They just they need to get more consistent help from everybody else, and you're in pretty good shape.
The reason that the Cubs are in first place is because they've been dominant at home coming into today, 44-19. However, today, as the Cubs wear their hideous Players Weekend uniforms and the Nationals wear their hideous Players Weekend uniforms, the Nationals lead 7-0 in the fifth inning. They've knocked John Lester out of the game, and the Cubs will need to hit some bombs if they want to get back into this one.
Randy, hideous is your opinion. I echo it wholeheartedly. They are pretty atrocious overall, but love seeing them lose in those. Those are better. By the way, we get a text from the 314 guys that says we have to start referring to Mr. Carricker as Randy Savage these days.
Yeah.
I enjoy
that. Was
that.
Really something, man.
Get him, Randy.
I'm pretty impressed. That was all right.
That's
my
all
friend.
Mike Ryder. He deserves the credit.
Okay, you told him what to do. He's very good, but you gave him that idea, and I know that you were sitting on that for a long time.
We got a segment next week, boys.
We do. You got actual tears, don't you?
This is fantastic. I hadn't heard that until...
Well, he drove to the ballpark, did he not?
Did something, yeah.
Got ready for BP.
As we roll on in the fast lane, Dexter Fowler was the game changer for the Cardinals last night, but he's really been one for them all season. That's next on 101 ESPN. Those were mic drops from last year when Dexter Fowler hit 180 with a 278 on base and a 298 slug. This year, his batting average, 71 points higher. His on base, 70 points higher. His slug, 135 points higher. And obviously, his OPS of 576 last year, 781 this year. And where he is this year, guys, his career OPS is 780. His career slug, and he's at 781. Career slug is at 421. This year, 433. His career on base, 359. This year, 348. His career batting average is 261. This year, hitting 251. He's basically turning in an average, typical career year for the 11 years prior to this one.
He's the player you signed.
Yeah,
that's all you want. Dexter Fowler was never a guy, even when he was given the contract, that you looked at and say, this guy's going to carry you. Here's our rising tide. No, he was a solid defensive player who could get on base. And that's exactly what he's been this year. But he's shown up in big-time spots like we see last night. He's got the power. He's got the energy. And my goodness, what a difference a year makes. And I'm very glad that we hang on to old stuff around
you,
here.
Me too.
Because I hope that we're able to play some of the stuff that we've all said and people have said about Matt Carpenter next year. I mean, maybe that's the case. We were hitting on this just a second ago with the very, very... positive things that Mike Shildt has to say about Matt Carpenter.
I think it's important that we celebrate and appreciate, at least from my perspective, when Matt Carpenter does something.
Positive, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Last year, Mike Shildt was very positive when it came to Dexter Fowler. And everything about throughout all his struggles, right as soon as he took over the job, like that was the first thing, one of the first things he did was sit down with him. Dex, hey, clean slate, dude. Let's start over. Let's figure some things out. And, Dexter ended up getting hurt. Season overall was a loss for Dex. But he came back ready to rock and roll this year. And what Dexter Fowler coming back this year and doing what he's doing, it's provided an amount of certainty within your team. You have a lot of question marks in the outfield if Dexter's not out there. You have a couple of outfielders where you think you got something. Harrison, you hope you have something. Lane Thomas, maybe, we'll see. Could be Edmund, could be Munoz, could be, a little bit of anybody out there. you know Dexter's out there. You know he's getting on base, and I know it's making this club better.
Yeah, and like Randy said, he is having a year that's pretty much along the par of what he typically does. I mean, if you go back and look at his numbers, as Randy pointed out to you, he is right around all of those career numbers for the categories that you mentioned. It's not quite as good as he was in 2018, or I'm sorry, in 2017 or the year before with the Cubs, but this is exactly what they need. They needed some steadiness. It's not great, but it's something they desperately needed in this offense. Somebody that you know from week to week what you're going to get. And that's really kind of been the problem, is that you've gone on a weekly or a bi-weekly basis with certain players who have just been on a tear. And then they follow up those week or two, with a lousy week or two. You know, what Dexter Fowler has provided has been pretty consistent from the start of the season to right now, and it's something they really needed.
Especially with the injury to Ozuna, the decline of Harrison Bader, which has been mentioned. After a really good April, Jose Martinez dropped off significantly. The kids we don't know about. He really has been the only stable outfielder. He's fourth on the team in games played. And Fowler's stability and his willingness and actually his quality defense in center field, he's kind of saved the Cardinals this year.
Well, I want to take this back to a conversation, Randy, you and I had yesterday about him. And it's about hitting the reset button. And it was a conversation that we were using in conjunction with the Matt Carpenter situation, that sometimes maybe you just need to get away from baseball for an offseason and get back at it, get healthy, do whatever work you feel like you need to, get a mental rest, that sort of stuff, and then come back, hit that reset button right before the season starts and everything's different. Clearly that has happened for Dexter Fowler. Can that happen for Matt Carpenter now going into next season? And I think that's really the best hope for the Cardinals right now, is that that's what he's done, that he's able to just, whatever issues he's had health-wise, if it's his back, if it's his shoulder, if it's something we don't even know about that's been bothering him all year, can he get that rectified? Can he get his mental state on track where it needs to be?
And that was where Dexter was. He was in a dark place.
Exactly. He was depressed. That's the word he used, is that he was going through depression because of the way he was playing and everything. Maybe that's what Matt Carpenter needs for next year.
Yeah, I think it's very obvious with Matt Carpenter that they hope that it happens a lot quicker than next year. I mean, he still gets plenty of opportunities. They still run him out there. Not in the lineup today, though, even after the very positive remarks from the skipper. But they'd love it to still happen this year, still love the upside there. But it's a great point, and at least there's a reference point,
right,
where you can say, all right, well, it did happen
it
for
happened
a guy
for
next
Dex.
Year. We know this with Matt Carpenter, just like Dex. He's under contract for the next 3 years. So what are you going to get out of him? What are you going to be able to get out of him? But you don't just continually hope for something in a playoff race. And that's one thing that Mike Shildt has proven here, at least recently, with the way that he's deployed his lineup the last couple of days. He's not just going to blindly put him out all the time.
I don't know if Dexter and the Cardinals would agree with this, but it seems like the injury last year, it was April 3rd that he left for the season with the bad foot, wound up being a blessing in disguise for Fowler. And you talked, Ronge, about hitting the reset button and getting to non-baseball activities. It seemed like it was just a spiral for Dexter last year, and it was going downhill. And I don't know that he was ever going to be able to come out of it if he would have just kept playing. And I do feel the same way. I think you guys, too, about Matt Carpenter. And you'd love to be able to just hit a reset button and all of a sudden the next day, wow, fresh breath and I'm a new player. But rarely does it happen that way.
There's a hope, and when you have somebody under contract for a few years, you don't really have a choice but to hope for that and to wait on it. And I think that's actually probably the right thing for the Cardinals to do, unless some other better option presents itself for them during the offseason and they just want to eat that salary, which I don't see them doing. I think it's going to be a situation where they're going to give him another opportunity in 2020.
Totally.
So they have to hope that whatever happens during the offseason gets him right. Whatever he's got to do will get him ready to go for baseball next year, and he's going to be back to the old Matt Carpenter. Or you know what, something close to it. Or something like what Dexter Fowler is doing even. Just be an above average offensive player. I think that's all they really need from him. I don't know if you, it'd be great if they got that MVP yeah. caliber guy, but I think if they could just get somebody who's a little bit above average, well, they're in good shape.
I'll tell
with
you
him.
What, if Marcell Ozuna is gone next year, you need a lot from
well,
that
yes.
position.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you need a lot from third base.
That
like,
puts a lot of pressure on him.
I don't
him
care
then.
Who's there. Like you need a lot there. Honestly, I mean, if I had to bet one way or the other, I would bet that Ozuna won't be here next year if I had to put my money on it. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I do know that it's possible. I don't believe that Matt Carpenter forgot how to hit. I don't believe that he is just completely gone. I think he's lost right now. I think that there are probably some underlying things that we don't know about when it comes to his health or his overall movement. And hopefully those things get rectified. But I also know that he's under contract for the next few years.
Yeah.
And he's going to be here.
And by the way, if he averages 550 plate appearances next year and in 2021, his contract automatically kicks in for 2022 at $18,500,000.
Yeah.
So it's that, or if he just gets 550 plate appearances in 2021.
Okay. That probably wouldn't happen, would it?
You wouldn't think so. And I would think that the Gorman ETA is probably 2021 also. And that'll eat into his playing time because you have to figure that Paul Goldschmidt's going to be playing.
And that's the hard thing about ETAs, too. Like, you know, what if Nolan Gorman just hits a speed bump and then he's stopped for a little while? It doesn't mean you just keep running Carpenter out there. Well, my point with that is if I am looking out at the free agent market, and this guy's not going to be there, but if he is, I want to look at different guys. I want to look over at Washington
and
say,
God.
Hey, you want Rendon? You don't want to pay him? We'll pay him a little bit of money. Like, upgrade now. If you get the opportunity.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something about Anthony Rendon. Had this Twitter conversation with a couple of people last night. He is so underrated in terms of when we talk about the best third baseman in the National League, we don't talk about him. We talk about Machado and Arenado. And when we talk about the best third baseman in baseball, we add Chapman to it. Anthony Rendon has been arguably the best third baseman in the National League over the last, like, 4 years. And he should get a lot more play than he does. If he ended up in a Cardinals uniform for next season, oh, baby. I'm ready to go. I'm buying a jersey.
It's not going
to
happen.
It's not going to happen, but if he did.
It's fun to throw these things out there.
Yes. My God, he's good. So we should talk about him way more
Gary
than we do.
And Gary Cole, because he's not going to be a Yankee.
Oh, he just, what, did he punch out 12 last night?
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
If he says, I'll sign with you, but I have to wear the same number that I've worn for the first 7 years of my career.
Fine.
Yeah, whatever you want, man.
So six is unretired.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
Just asking.
Stan will give it right back to you.
It's a placeholder.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
it's terrible.
It's just on loan.
Yeah.
We're giving
it's
it right back.
Before.
You don't think Stan wanted to win?
Hey, Peyton Manning, that happened in Denver.
That's right.
Frank Trapuca had his number 18 retired, and it came out for Peyton Manning. So do the same thing for Rendon.
Sure.
Next up, college football is entering its 150th year, and a lot has changed over those 150 years, and it's still changing. Our friend Dennis Dodd wrote about it at CBSSports.com, and that's next on 101 ESPN. That's CBSSports.com's Dennis Dodd. He is a local product, and he is across the state in Kansas City. He was on with Kevin Wheeler this morning. As the college football season gets underway tomorrow, we've got it for you here on 101 ESPN, Miami and Florida at 6:30. Dennis wrote about the 150th year of college football. I want to start with this, guys, and I know that I get a lot of blowback because of my stance, but I really do enjoy watching college football. I think it's a cleaner game. I think there are fewer rules. I find it more enjoyable to watch than the NFL. And I'm only watching the best of the best. I'm watching the SEC. I'm watching Ohio State. I'm watching Michigan. But the games, the college football games that I watch, I like watching better than NFL games.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't
think that the play isn't near. You know what I like more about college? I like the atmosphere better. I like the energy and the excitement around it, the students that are there, the passion, the idea of rooting for the laundry. Like, I love that aspect of it. But I also love seeing the best to do what they do, and that's the NFL. And the beauty of this is you don't have to pick one.
You don't?
You got Saturdays and Sundays, right. And actually every day in between. There's a little something on. But college football is it's exciting. It's passionate. It's something that even if your team goes on a downturn, doesn't matter. Like,
did
that's
you have
who you are.
13-game parlay last year?
Yeah, I hit a monster. It was awesome. It was like a stupid $5 bet that won me like $3,000.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it was.
You won 13 games in a parlay?
Yes. Yeah, it's just stupid. I was putting together on this app of mine, you know, and having a good time.
Has that ever happened?
Maybe
for
I
you
had a
win that big?
Gosh, no. Nobody. You don't hit that. I think it
that's
was a,
like that's
I think
absurd.
It was an 11-teamer, is what it was.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It was silly.
Fantastic. Now, some of the quotes from Dennis Dodd's story. The Hall of Fame athletic trainer at Oklahoma, Scott Anderson, said, "I hear that this game is under attack type of thing. No, it's not. We're just trying to find a way to mitigate some risks. Try to make the game safer." Dr. Javier Cardenas, a noted Phoenix-based neurologist specializing in concussions and brain injury, said, "I don't think there's a question about football getting safer. There are policies for practice at all levels, high school, college, and pro, to have fewer contact practices. If you're limiting contact in practice, you're limiting head impact. And one thing that I think college football does better than the NFL is take a guy out of the game with the headshots, and they have the review, too. But if you are found to have been targeting, you get removed from the game." That the most important thing for players is playing time, and they don't want to get taken out of the game, and that's why I believe you see fewer of those headshots than you used to see in college football.
Yeah, I hate that too, the targeting one. Like sometimes you just sometimes you make a mistake, or sometimes somebody shrinks into a hit. You know what I'd like to see though, and I like to see this in the NFL, and it's written about it in this piece as far as trainers. Trainers say there was like a survey done. About 20% of trainers felt that there was pressure to get players back out on the field. Like this is like during the game. I wish that there was some sort of way. And look, players are guilty of this too, because players will lie. They'll act like they feel good. They'll say, "No, I don't see four of you right now. Everything is totally good." But you can't do anything about that. If somebody's lying to you, somebody's lying to
right.
you. But I wish that there was some way to, just as far as player safety goes, separate the two. All right, this guy has got an injury. We're taking him away until he's medically cleared. So this could be a barrier. This could be whatever. But there's no communication between the playing side and this side. Like, we'll let you know when he's ready.
Like, take him away from the sideline.
Yeah, I just feel like that could stop any pressure of coaches looking for this guy.
Right.
He needs to be in, checking in. Is he okay? Is he okay? As a player, you know what you're hearing? Are you okay? Can you help us right now?
Mm-hmm.
If you
yep.
can kind of get away from that. It's just a small thing, but maybe that small thing ends up helping.
That's a good question. I wonder how much pressure they really do feel when they go in the tent and nobody can see them except for the couple of people who are in doing the test. I wonder if they're feeling that I'm on the sideline pressure. I need to get back in there. I wonder if it would be different psychologically if you go back into the locker room mm-hmm. and they do the test in there where you're secluded from everybody else. Maybe that would make a difference. I do know that football in general, NFL for sure, college, I would imagine they're concerned about this. It isn't, I think what they're worried about, the overall thing they are most concerned about is people years from now not playing football.
Yeah.
And it's because it's not about watching it. I don't mind watching two teams pummel each other into oblivion. That's entertaining for me. But it's a question of whether or not in 10 to 15 years, are people allowing their kids to play football? I think that's what they're worried about.
And Dennis Dodd wrote about that. He said that over the last 3 years, or over the last 5 years, high school football participation is down 3%, according to the National Federation of State High School Associations. Since the federation's peak in 2009-2010, participation is down 6.5% across the country. Participation in California high school football is at a 20-year low, down 12% in the last 5 years. And in 2018, the Aspen Institute determined that, for the first time, more kids ages 6 to 12 were playing flag football than tackle football. And this morning on the Kevin Wheeler Show, Dodd talked about what would keep the overall numbers from dropping even more.
We won't make any progress until the liability for what we're talking about is pretty much taken out of the game. In other words, every time somebody gets a head injury or a concussion, or you know, somebody 50, you know, been out of the game 50 years, has dementia, sue somebody, the NCAA and the NFL, frankly, have to get away from that. I'm not sitting here telling you I know how to do it, but things have improved.
And what you have to do is convince parents, primarily, that if they send their sons out to play football, that it is going to be safe.
But it's not. It's never going to be. Like, that's the thing. And you can continue to make all these changes that you want. And by the way, rightfully so, you should. You should, because you do. To your point, Randy, you have to at least suggest, look, we've done everything we can to make this game still football and as safe as it can possibly be, yet there's still risk involved. I do wonder, to Dennis Dodd's point, on the liability aspect of this, how do you do that? Like, how do you get away from that part of it? Because in the piece that he wrote at CBS Sports, talked about in Arizona, they got rid of all of the junior college football programs because they couldn't afford the insurance anymore. They couldn't afford the liability of having it. I feel like in anything you do, especially now, like, we have so much knowledge of everything as far as CTE goes. And there was a very dark period where there was information, it wasn't given out to the players. And if I was one of those players, I would sue the hell out of the NFL, sue anybody that had that information. You have it now. Well, you know now, right?
Yeah.
So how can you sue for something way down the road when you put yourself in that position?
I think that's the difficulty, is trying to figure out how to do it and to make it stick, because a lot of former players are just not getting the help they need. What I wish would happen, and I know I've said this before, I just wish when it comes to the NFL specifically, they would just say, look, we're going to try to make the rules as health friendly as possible, but we also recognize this is going to damage our players when they're older, or by the time they're older. So we're just going to take care of you. We're going to take care of everything. You don't have to worry about a thing. Your family doesn't have to worry about anything. We've got enough money to do it. That's what I wish NFL would do.
And there are some things, and head injuries are one of them, that can't be fixed. But I'm amazed at how hardened we are to pretty severe injuries. Look at a guy like Sam Bradford, who tore his ACL twice. And we think, oh, torn ACL, football happens. Torn ACL is a pretty traumatic injury.
Yeah, it is.
And you look at Sam, who's bone on bone now in his right knee, and he's not even 30 years old, and he's going to have arthritis for his entire life. He's going to have to deal with that. We don't even think about the trauma of that part of things.
No, but he's a football player.
Right.
And you know, when you get into stuff, there's somebody that is doing flooring right now or roofing, and it's a bad shoulder, it's a bad back. We don't think about that either. We don't care about it. And it is what it is. It's part of the job. Any job that you do, whether you choose to do it or you just fall into it, there are things that happen.
Right. But your thing, and I think it's okay for a player to have the expectation of, I'm going to do permanent damage to my body for your league. I'm good at doing something. I'm good at doing something that people are willing to pay to watch. So I'm going to do this for your multi-billion dollar league. I expect you to take care of me when it's over. I think that's okay. I wish the NFL would go that direction. But going back to our original conversation, the concern is the amount of talent that's going to be available ultimately to college and NFL. Look, what might wind up happening is there are only sections of the country that are playing football 20 to 30 years from now, and it's probably mostly in the South.
Yeah,
quite honestly, they're never going to stop playing football in the South. That is always going to be a way of life. They're never going to let go of that. So maybe all of the football talent in the country only comes from one area of the country.
I have an amazing, incredible statistic. And I put up a piece on Facebook yesterday, a YouTube Walter Payton video. Walter Payton missed, as a running back, playing on artificial turf his entire career, hard rock artificial turf. He missed a game in his rookie year as a running back and hit. He hit like a defensive player. He played in 186 consecutive games to end his career. He played 13 years in the NFL at running back and missed one game. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah, no,
how tough that guy was.
And that's one of the – it's not – he was, I guess, to a certain extent, fortunate that he was able to do that. Like, his leg never flew off or anything like that. But tough as nails. Because you know, for out of the 186 in a row, how many do you think he felt okay for?
Zero. Zero.
Probably. It's like, all right, here we go. This is my job. This is what we do.
Yeah.
Football.
What was it, Laurinaitis that told us? Even now, when he gets out of bed in the morning, he's still hurting.
Yeah, I bet. It's part of the gig, man. And you, even if that is the thing, too, because I say you know what you're signing up for. Even if you do know what you're signing up for, you never know. We tend to live in, at least, you know, just baseball is not a great example of this as far as, like, the toll that it takes on your body compared to football. But, like, there are times where I wouldn't even think of something. Like I'm hurting. I'm like, I'm going to say I'm fine. I'm going to be good to go. You never think about the future. You always live in, like, increments of right here, right now. You're always worried about this, they just drafted a running back behind me. I'm going to have to say I'm good to go. Like, everything is fine.
Right.
Nobody worries about that. Or I'm going to go level that guy right there because that's my job. You don't worry about CTE down the road. And I don't think you can play like that. I don't think you can play worrying about the future, yet the future's always coming.
Well, obviously, some players are starting to worry about it more. That's why you get so many early retirements now.
Mm-hmm.
Many more than they used to. Right. It didn't used to be as much as it's happening now, the Calvin Johnson, that sort of thing. These guys are worried about what happens. They've seen it. They've seen former players take their own lives and
right.
and do it in such a way their brain is still intact so they can have their family go study it. And it's really sad. I think they're seeing that and they're getting out of the sport.
It's Fastlane on 101 ESPN, and Jack Flaherty is back on the bump for the Cardinals tonight, and Tom Brady finally lost in something. That's next in your Hot Topics of the Day on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals play the second of four against the Colorado Rockies tonight at the ballpark, and Jack Flaherty will pitch against Peter Lambert. Flaherty, since the All-Star break, has a record of 3-0 with an 0.83 earned run average. In seven games, he's thrown 43 and a third innings. He has struck out 55 and walked 13.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Yeah.
Doing okay, and even better in August, an ERA of like 0.35. I mean, he has been so good, and he's been the guy that the Cardinals needed desperately. How many times have we had the conversation this year, guys, if you had one game to win, who would pitch that game? If
he's everybody's it now.
Healthy. Yeah, we had the conversation all year, and we didn't have an answer until, I don't know, a month ago,
right,
is basically the answer, and really he's solidified it here in the last handful of starts. So he's been commanding the counts. He's spotting up his fastball now better than we've seen him ever at the big league level, and then he's able to work off of that with the slider and the breaking ball. Love my chances anytime he's on the bump.
The way he's pitched over the last month or two, I think has pretty much determined if they do make it to a division series, and we've been having that similar conversation, who gets the ball game one. I don't think there's any question. If he continues this, there is no doubt it's got to be him. He is their best starter right now, and by a lot.
Same lineup for the Cardinals tonight as last night. Fowler, Wong, Goldschmidt, Ozuna, DeJong, Molina, Edmund, Bader, and Jack Flaherty. Meanwhile, this afternoon at Wrigley Field, the Nationals have an eighth-inning lead over the Cubs, 8-0. The Cubs only have one hit on the day against Anibal Sanchez.
Well, so then you'll be tied for first.
If
right.
you can win, if Jack Flaherty
right.
can come away with a win and
well,
reduce that earned run
win,
average.
Randy.
Yeah.
Guys, this got a chance to be, while it hasn't played out like everybody hoped, I thought that we were going to have like the best offense ever and just murder everybody. It's going to be tight. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. It's an entertainment business.
It is nerve-wracking. It is it's frustrating at times. Sometimes it's entertaining. Last night was entertaining.
By the way, John Lester was jettisoned after 4 1/3 innings for the Cubs today.
They shot him to the moon?
Yeah, kind of. He allowed 6 earned runs on 9 hits. Lester's ERA is now at 4.49. I still don't want to see him in a playoff or
either.
Down the stretch, but his earned run average is high. And as I mentioned, Anibal Sanchez, 7 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk. He's thrown only 91 pitches for Washington and has an opportunity, of course, to throw a complete game, which doesn't happen much these days.
Guys, do we know whether or not the Cardinals are going with black or white for their home?
I don't know.
Unis, because they do get to choose. The Cubs were watching the game right now. They went with white for the players' weekend.
And I would think with the Cardinals, with the heat here in St. Louis, they would go with white.
Ah, that's a good point. But they're playing at night.
Still hot.
Sunday's a day game, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could switch it up.
I haven't seen the Cardinals yet, obviously. These are hideous jerseys. Like, I don't know who all was in on this and say, yeah, this looks good. Let's sign off on the all-white, all-black jerseys. But
okay,
not great.
Here's the only thing that makes sense is if their assumption was all the players are going to wear colorful wristbands or armbands or socks or something else, then maybe all that stuff will kind of pop up against the white or the black unis.
Okay.
But it doesn't look like... Mm-hmm.
I don't see a lot of it yet. There was somebody on the bench for the Cubs. And I, by the way, I thought they were supposed to wear white hats.
That's what I thought, too. That's what they showed us.
I'm thinking Lester might have change
maybe.
That.
Maybe. Can you unilaterally do that?
I don't
pitchers,
know. Yeah,
starting
I don't
pitchers
know.
Kind of do that
yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, but not if it's a marketing thing and they're trying
to
sell
those
hats.
Because he was supposed to wear a black hat anyhow, right? The pitcher can't wear a white hat.
That's a good point.
That was the thing in the rules. So the pitcher can't wear a white hat. He had to wear the black one, but everybody else was going to wear white.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think
the
Cubs are white
at
paying a fine.
And I know you can't have, like, a white glove.
Yeah. Last night, the Orioles surrendered their 259th home run of 2019, breaking a tie with the 2016 Reds for the most homers allowed by a team in a single season. They did it on August 22nd. They've allowed the most home runs in the history of baseball.
Hell of a record.
They did it.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
They did it. You know what? If anybody was going to do it this year, it was going to be Baltimore.
Yep.
Like everybody knew that that was the team. Good for them. I believe was it off of Asher Wojciechowski was the winner, the record. So he's got that. Mm-hmm. That's a mantelpiece if he can get that ball back.
Get it signed.
Yeah, good for him.
Football, the Raiders and Packers played on an 80-yard field last night in Winnipeg due to holes in the end zone of IG Field, where goalposts for the CFL's bigger field usually are drilled. Well, the holes were there. The NFL said, oh, we can't play there because of holes where the goalposts normally are. So they played on an 80-yard field and had about 5 injuries.
Pretty cool, huh?
Can't they just put cones over it like you would do?
Don't run here?
Yeah, I mean, anybody remember playing some street ball as a kid? Yeah. Like, maybe there's a manhole over there that is a little wobbly. Don't step on it. We'll put something there so you see it. Everybody was able to avoid the curbs and stuff like that. These are grown men. These are NFL players. They'd be just fine. They won't step in the hole.
Yeah.
Think about how many, was it 30 players, 33 players or something that were supposed to start that did not because of it?
Because of it, right.
That's awesome.
Patriots quarterback Tom Brady's application to trademark the term Tom Terrific has been refused by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Poor Tom. He deserves better than that, doesn't he?
No, I think that's totally fine.
Is that a, are you willing just to say that, okay, Tom Seaver was Tom Terrific?
I'm willing to say that. Yeah, he had it first.
He did.
It was his.
Yeah.
Can't just come in just any Tom can take Tom Terrific.
Well, you can trademark Play Gloria when a lot of people say it.
Apparently, you can attempt to trademark the.
Mm-hmm. Did that go through or did we find out?
It's a holding pattern, I think. Mm. Caught up in paperwork. You know how it goes.
I loved how Michigan, they joked about trying to trademark of.
Yeah.
Good for them.
By the way, the ruling today said that the applied-for mark consists of or includes matter which may falsely suggest a connection to Tom Seaver. So that is absolutely the case. We have a busy weekend for you here on 101 ESPN. Tomorrow, you're going to have the opener of the college football season at 6:30. Miami will host Florida. Also, tomorrow afternoon at 2:30, the Yankees and Dodgers. And the Yankees and Dodgers are on Sunday Night Baseball as well, 6 o'clock Sunday. So a lot coming your way sports-wise here on 101 ESPN. And this final note, gentlemen. The equivalent ad value in media mentions for Popeye's chicken sandwich is $23.25 million in the first 11 days. That's from digital, newsprint, radio, TV, and social, according to Apex Marketing. Now, it was 23.25. It's probably 23.3 million since we mentioned it.
No problem. Mm-hmm.
But Chris Long put it up on social media. He was eating one.
They're running out of sandwiches.
And they're supposed to be as good as or better than Chick-fil-A, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I haven't tried it, but apparently there are locations, lots of locations around the country that are running out.
Yeah, I saw one. It was a video online. Somebody who just kept videotaping people
coming
up to
the door and seeing the sign and then walking
away. No sandwiches till Friday. I told me before the show, I'm like, this marketing stuff works because I want one of those sandwiches.
I do too.
And it's going to happen. And
I'll
get a Chick-fil-A next to it and be good to go.
I will do like I did for Shake Shack, waited for the die down.
I still haven't had it.
Yeah.
No. I got to get down on that, too.
It's good.
Very sheltered, Randy.
We'll make it happen.
All right, cool.
We should do a show from the Central
Shake Shack?
West End. Just from your
That'd
place.
Be great.
Let's do it from your place.
What
I heard
the hell?
It's easy
close.
To get into.
Yeah, let's go. Oh, damn it.
What?
It's...
I got a feeling I could talk my way in.
I think
so.
No,
is Ron's place? Yeah,
no,
come on.
No. Can't do it now. Oh, I've... There's a lockdown, baby.
Is Barney Fife gone?
That's true. Yeah, he's He's sleeping at the desk.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. Coming up, it's the last chance to fight me this week. We've got a new fighter next in the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN.